to me, he's one of the heroes of my life that I've met and gotten to know. And I think maybe I'm going to start the story of General Romeo Dallaire in 1994, January 11th. Something called the Genocide Facts. What is that? It was then, with the technology, Romeo Dallaire on the ground leading the United Nations Assistance Mission for Rwanda sent a fax back to headquarters saying that a genocide is about to take place. A genocide against the Tutsis is being planned. He even said in 20 minutes, his personnel could kill up to 1,000 Tutsis. He said, I want to protect them. But it was outside of his mandate. Sorry, said the UN. And what happened next was a genocide. And he witnessed it. And it changed his life and it changed many lives. And he's talked about that. And now he's being inducted along with some incredible Canadians on Canada's Walk of Fame. Incredible honor. Bruce Coburn, Keanu Reeves, Julie Black, some incredible people. But my personal hero is Romeo Dallaire, and the retired Canadian Lieutenant General and Senator Romeo Dallaire joins us now. Hello, my dear friend.
This has got to be one of the best introductions I've ever had.
You are on the Walk of Fame, but it's one more step in a walk of that you never did for fame. You should be on the Walk of Service because you served. But congratulations on this honor. I wanted to start today talking about your life, but something happened that you and I, that I'm sure brought back some memories. The architect of the genocide died 2 weeks ago. He was serving a prison sentence. I wanted to know if you wanted to talk about that.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Evan. When I testified in front of the International Tribunal in Arusha for these genocidae, and I indicated that I would not testify if they had capital punishment, even though the horrors and things they did. I said, however, if they get a life sentence, then I expect them to ultimately be buried in the cemetery of the prison. So Bagosora got first a life sentence, then a 35-year sentence, and he died in prison while still serving it. The fact that it was reduced was a review by an appeals court that with an American judge, interestingly enough, that skewed a lot of the initial sentences, and there's been a lot of debate around that. So,
but I want people to understand that Bagosora, who was a Rwandan army colonel, is widely regarded as the spearhead of the 1994 genocide that cost the lives of 800,000 people. You met him. Did you know him?
At every meeting that had anything to do with security or future plans, he was always present, either in the front row or the second row. In the morning, after the plane was shot down, he was leading, when I caught them, in an office of the Minister of Defense. He's the one who was leading the creation of the interim government of extremists. He ultimately was the one who not only threatened me to kill me, but actually had implemented plans to do so, and Canada ultimately asked me to arm myself, which I hadn't up until then. So he was, yes, the architect on the ground, Evan.
He was.
The strategic thinking behind that was done by the president's wife and her family and a series of people called the Zero Force, and they were evacuated by the French within 48 hours. And so Bagosora was the guy who was implementing it on the ground.
Yeah, and this is a remarkable moment as we speak to Romeo Dallaire. When you wrote your famous book, Shake Hands with the Devil, The Failure of Humanity in Rwanda, that became both a dramatic film and a documentary film, the devil among the many, Bagosora was one of the devils who you shook hands with, and you had to. For people who forget about this, and, you know, events, we shouldn't forget about this, and we'll get at what you've done since about the child soldiers. I want people, because I think these accounts are so important, if any of our listeners have never read Shake Hands with the Devil or seen the films, do you still have, and you've spoken so powerfully, poignantly, and eloquently about this, sir, about the memories you have and how they cause you PTSD and led you to try suicide, but do you still go back to those dark days in the genocide and see what you saw? And if so, what goes through that haunted mind of yours?
The scenarios have changed significantly over the last 4 years since I've fallen in love with an incredible woman who ran the Valcartier, the big base there, family support center that helped so many soldiers' families and soldiers who came back injured, and some of them were killed, and living with the traumas. Love has conquered it, unless I'm in a real specific situation where I'm describing it. Like next week, I'm going to West Point because I'm lecturing on that campaign to the West Point cadets and their academic staff. But apart,
and then it comes back, and then even the healing power of love recedes, and the horror returns.
It does. But it does now rarely. While before, as I wrote in my last book, Training for First Light, it was constantly there the minute the sun went down, and the night was, in fact, the instrument of continuing something that originally we called PTSD. But we realized that PTSD is a trauma, often punctual, created, and so on, while what we were going through was what we call a moral injury. And a moral injury is when you see things that go so against every fiber of your values and way of life and what you consider to be right and wrong, is that it actually breaks your ability to comprehend how human beings can act that way, and that, in fact, throws you into a spiral of often self-destruction.
God, it's you can never really, you learn to live with it, you learn to handle it, you learn to build scaffolding about it, but it never leaves, does it?
No, and it is one of the things that we learned early on with our troops that were sent to Bosnia. I had troops also in Cambodia, and I was there with them for a while, and the campaigns that we conducted in the first Gulf War too, is that when I came back, my colleagues said, "Oh, you know, you're back home. You're in the real world now. There were budget cuts and so on, and don't worry about it. With time and the work, it'll disappear." What they absolutely didn't have a clue about is that what I had sustained was an injury, what we call an operational stress injury, and that injury is like losing an arm or a leg. You have to go through the process of healing, of the scar sort of, you know, closing, but the scar remains. And so this stuff will never go away. It will come back digitally clear in slow motion when triggered. And if not, you work on a prosthesis that makes you avoid having to get into scenarios that might pull it back.
Retired Canadian Lieutenant General Senator Romeo Dallaire, who's just been among those inducted into Canada's Walk of Fame. He's going to stay with us. I want to talk about child soldiers. I also want to get your perspective on Afghanistan. 40,000 Canadians serve there. Yeah. And now they've watched that country return to the Taliban, and I want your thoughts on that and the continued extraordinary work that Romeo Dallaire does. So, folks, stay with us. You are in the presence of greatness with Romeo Dallaire. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the program, and it is the great honor to have one of my great heroes, retired Canadian Lieutenant General Senator Romeo Dallaire, who has just been wisely inducted into Canada's Walk of Fame, but whose walk towards this moment has been a struggle, at times. And there are bloody footprints on that walk to this last moment, this latest moment, rather. And the Rwandan genocide of 94. But he served our country well, and he served it as a senator as well. And he's gone on to take his personal wounds, as he calls them, and say, I'm not just going to talk about what happened in Rwanda. I'm going to lift up the world's eyes and to the plight of children, child soldiers, which he's done so much for. And here we are, Canada's reeling from the Taliban losses in Afghanistan, where 40,000 Canadians served and we lost 158. And Romeo Dallaire, great to have you back on the program, but I just wondered, when you saw the Taliban take over and you saw the pain in many veterans' eyes, what was your sense about, A, how the veterans are handling it? And I guess the other thing is, what does the world do now?
Well, you're touching a bunch of points. Let me go try to get through them then, Evan. First of all, when I saw what was happening at that airport over those days, that brought back exactly what happened in Rwanda, where troops came in to extricate white people and expatriates, but abandoned all the Rwandans to be slaughtered in the streets getting to the airport. And so we watched as we were abandoned by our colleagues and ultimately witnessed and stayed to witness. So there was a near hate of having seen troops abandon us in the middle of that catastrophe. So our guys who and girls who went overseas, who were there to help build a nation, part of building a nation into a new construct of which it had a security forces that would be meeting the criteria of human rights and proper application of use of force and so on. They did a lot of that training, but there was nothing behind them. There's nothing, it serves no purpose if you're training people, but there's no structure that will give them a sense that they are serving a nation and that the nation is and that there to also support them and ultimately their families, and that they are in a process of actually defending the whole of the country and not certain elites. And so where it broke down was behind the lines, and ultimately these guys just had no reason to continue to fight or to work. Mm-hmm. And so our guys have an enormous amount of bitterness, if not just anger, at the fact of having trained, having taken risks, having taken casualties, and some are, and a number of them are living with the injuries that they sustained there, physical and moral. There's still suicides going on. There's apparently over 71 suicides already due to that mission. And what we see is that just even to help those that helped them, that saved Canadian lives, it took the veterans themselves having to take things in their own hands.
It sure did.
Because of the inept and late, and sometimes I even question whether or not we really wanted to save those people who saved our people. And now we're accepting 40, going to accept 40,000. I'm trying to get 132 women and children who are doctors and nurses who helped Canadians in Afghanistan, trying to get them through the border in Azerbaijan and then fly them through Albania to Canada. So there is enormous bitterness, and that is going to stay, and it's going to throw some of those soldiers back into the rut of the terrible injury that they're suffering.
And what do you say to those soldiers as I speak to you? Retired Lieutenant General Romeo Dallaire, author of Shake Hands with the Devil. What do you say to those? Some of them listening right now.
I'll tell them what my father told me, what sustains me. And my dad joined the army in 1929, the Vandoos. He did 6 years overseas and came back psychologically affected, alcoholic and aggressive and God knows. Anyways, the evening before I left for military college, he told me three things. He said, if you're going into the army to make a career, change your name from Dallaire to Dallas because you're going nowhere.
Interesting.
As there were only two French Canadian generals at the time. The second thing that he told me was, you'll never be a millionaire, but you'll have a career that will bring you ultimately, potentially, to the brink of your ability to sustain whatever the mission might push on you. And that is sort of exciting for a young person to be challenged that way. But the third thing is what I'm getting at, and sorry for the long story, is remember, you're joining a service. You're not there because you expect people to say thank you. You're not there ultimately to be rewarded. You're there because you're serving your nation. And so we were serving the nation and going through a policy of security, and that's got to be your fallback position. You serve, and if you serve, well, you pay the price and sacrifices to achieve that mission.
If you serve, you pay the price. It's incredible. I talk about that a bit, Romeo Dallaire, when people, you know, it's kind of incredible. And I just got a minute or two, but there are people out there saying, it's my freedom. I won't take a vaccine shot. I always think of the veteran suit like you and all those who are ready to give their lives for our freedoms. And I guess the freedom to say no, but like people won't even take that sacrifice for the collective good. What do you make of that?
But not only the sacrifice, they are putting at risk fellow citizens.
Yes.
It is my my disappointment that we have not taken a very determined and even legalistic position, that these people are putting other lives at risk, and because they're doing that, their fellow citizens, that's illegal.
Yeah.
And that's the position that has to be taken.
Well, the vaccine mandates are coming, but I always think of what you say, to serve is to sacrifice.
Yeah.
And people won't even sacrifice or serve sometimes, and it baffles me. And I wish they'd listen to retired Lieutenant General Romeo Dallaire. Hey, my friend, thank you. Congratulations on being part of the Walk of Fame.
I don't deserve it. It's wonderful. It's neat, and I'm so glad.
You deserve it.
And my wife is extraordinarily happy about that, and we'll have a magnificent dress on that red carpet. But I'll tell you, I'm not sure I deserve it. So
you deserve it. And let me tell you something. I love you, and everyone does. And we love you, and thank you.
Take care. All the best to you and your family.
Yeah, you too, my friend.
Right.
You deserve it. Retired Lieutenant General Romeo Dallaire. How good is he? And I mean it. When I've been down, he's one of the few people he always shows up. That's Romeo Dallaire.